Well, welcome back to the show, Herb.
Thank you.
We want to talk to you a little bit. We got some important things to talk about. Well, the first story that we want to talk about, and again, if you guys have any questions or concerns, you need some help or advice, Herb is here to help you with all consumer issues. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. This is a crazy story, Herb. We always talk about identity theft. It's one of the top things that we talk about every month when you're here. It's an important issue and a scary issue. And we always try, you know, you always try to give advice on how people can kind of avoid that. But wow, more than a million children were victims of ID theft last year. This is a crazy story. Tell everybody about this.
And we always assume that identity theft is an adult problem, and when you and I talk about it, that's what we're normally talking about. But no one is immune from this crime, and this new survey that was done, the 2018 Child Identity Fraud Study by Javelin Strategy and Research, indicates that more than a million children in the country were ID theft victims this year, and that resulted in losses of about $2.7 billion. And I actually talked to the researcher who did this story, and he says we're probably only getting the tip of the iceberg here. It's probably a much more serious problem. 20% of the, two-thirds of the victims were under the age of 8, two-thirds under 8, 20% were 8 to 12 years old.
Wow.
And the reason why criminals are targeting young people, minors, is because they're basically a blank slate. They don't have and shouldn't have a credit file at that young age in their life in most cases. There'll be some kids as they become teenagers and their parents put them on their credit card as an authorized user. They may get a credit file, but most minors don't have any kind of credit file.
Yeah.
So it's a blank slate to work on. And if you get them early enough, you know, we get the Social Security numbers now when we're born, you have all those years to do mayhem. What they do with the information is they get this stolen Social Security number and then they create what's called a synthetic identity. So they take a valid Social Security number and then mix it with a bogus name, a bogus address, and other information, and then create this synthetic identity, this new person who can then use that Social Security number to do all kinds of things that you can do these days with that: open accounts, to open credit cards, take out loans, do all kinds of things. And of course, the information is bogus, but since the social is right, it's a real Social Security number, it will wind up going onto this, you know, starting a credit file that when this person does start to use a credit history, they'll have all these bad marks on their file.
Now, I know that, you know, there are many ways for these guys to get Social Security numbers as an adult. If you fall for a scam and you type your Social Security number into something, but how did they go about getting like children's Social Security numbers? What are some of the scams in that way? Because I know adults can fall victim to these kind of scams, but with these kids aren't even, you know, they're not even online. They're not doing anything like that. How does that happen?
Right. In some cases, it's totally unknown, but this report pointed out that unfortunately, a lot of times it's a family job. It's an inside job. 60% of the child victims, they say, know their perpetrator.
Oh,
that means a parent,
man,
or a guardian or other family member or family friend, which is just horrible. Only 7% of adult victims who are ID theft victims know who did it. So it's really hard to prevent this crime because in many cases it's familial crime. It can be a situation where, the custodian, the parent, a guardian, whatever, knows all this personal information and they can use it. Sometimes they justify to themselves that they're just doing something. I can't pay the bills. I can't do something. Well, I can use the kid's Social Security number to buy me more time and do something.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes it's totally criminal. Sometimes in their minds they can justify it, but that's why it's so hard to do. And in many cases, the warning flags don't come in as quickly as it would with an adult who would have some warning signs that something was going on because they have the credit file and that sort of thing and are monitoring their credit scores and would see that their credit score would drop. So they're easy targets. They're not looking for a problem. They're not protecting themselves. They've got to be guarded by someone.
Yeah.
Sometimes those people are the ones doing it, and then there aren't a lot of red warning flags, or people aren't noticing the red warning flags when indeed there is a problem.
Are there flaws in these synthetic identities that these people create? Can people, you know, who are trying to stop these people, are there flags for that? Like can you spot a synthetic identity?
Well, I don't know the answer to that specific question, but the way you can spot the problem is that parents have to be on guard for anything that happens for their minor child that does not make sense, that only an adult should have happened to them. That's how these things are often flagged by the parents. So, for instance, your kid, your 5-year-old kid should not be getting summons to jury duty. Your 5-year-old
right.
kid should not be getting pre-approved credit card offers.
Right.
They should not be getting traffic tickets. They should not be getting anything that an adult would get. They should not be getting notices they're delinquent in their payments, collection notices. You know, you tend to write those things off and say, oh, somebody screwed up. Well, in this day and age, you can't say, oh, maybe somebody screwed up. You got to say, uh-oh, maybe my kid's identity was stolen, and I need to pursue this and find out what's going on by contacting the credit bureaus and seeing if there's something that needs to be done to take care of this problem.
Yeah. Wow, I mean, the detail that it's an inside job. It's just horrifying. That's so terrible.
It is, and because you're damaging this child for their life, that they're going to have to deal with the consequences of all this, and have to prove that they had nothing to do with this, which sometimes is not very easy to do. Let alone, you know, they have this bad mark on them when they start out in life. So, when it's a family job, that's just a totally horrendous situation. I know we're almost out of time. You got to go to the break, but yeah. In the article, which is on consumerman.com, it does suggest things, because every time I talk about this, parents want to know: is there anything proactively
please.
I can do?
Please tell
us. Some cases you can't, if you go to, and this is all in the article, if you go to annualcreditreport.com, that's where you would get a look at your credit file. If you put your kid's social security number in and they're, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old or whatever, they do not have a credit file for some reason, as I said, that they maybe have a card associated with yours, there shouldn't be anything come back. It's just a no credit file. If it says there's a credit file, boy oh boy, you got a problem. And then if you go to there will be specific directions on how to request a file, to see if there's a file for if they're under 13, because you really have to prove a lot to make sure that you're not a bad guy trying to get their information,
right.
Or older than 14. But it walks us through the steps that you can go through and look forward and find out what's going on and deal with that. But the biggest thing for all the parents listening or grandparents, any warning sign, anything that a kid should not be getting, a phone call for collection, a collection notice, jury duty, you know, something like that,
yeah.
A pre-approved credit card offer, that is like bells should go off and you need to go, I better check out and see if there's a problem right away.
Right. Okay. Herb, thanks a lot. Hang on a second, okay?
Okay, you got it.
All right, Herb Weissbaum is with us. He is the consumer reporter for, he does covers the consumer beat for NBCNews.com, and check out consumerman.com for more. We've got more stories, and if you want some help or you have an issue or a question, it's 312-981-7200. News is up after this. Hey, welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here in downtown Chicago, and we are here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And I'll be visiting Steve this morning for my weekly visit, Thursday morning, 6:20. We'll talk about some fun stuff with the gang. Always a pleasure to be on Steve's show. All right, we got some other stuff, bunch of stuff coming up on the show this morning. We're going to talk about weird habits that people have, some summer obsessions, the weirdest traditions in each state. The Emmy nominations are announced in a matter of hours, and I'm just going to talk a little bit about that and make a few predictions. Right now, though, Herb Weissbaum is with us. He's an Emmy Award-winning reporter. He joins us once a month. He covers the consumer beat for NBCNews.com, and his website is consumerman.com. He joins us once a month. If you have any questions or concerns, 312-981-7200, and let's welcome Herb back to the show. Hi, Herb.
Hello, Nick.
All right. Let's talk about the consumer satisfaction with restaurants, and it seems to be up.
So
go ahead.
Yeah, we love to eat.
Yeah,
and we're eating out more. We're spending almost half of our food dollars dining out. And according to this new study by the American Customer Satisfaction Index, they do it every year. We're more pleased with the experience that we're having when we go out to eat. The industry rated 79 out of 100 points, which is very high, and that's nearly a 2% jump from last year, which, when you look at a whole industry, is a really, really big jump. And the improvement took place at both full service restaurants, which had been declining a little bit, and fast food establishments, and doing a whole bunch of things that tend to be making people happy. Just for your show, Nick, I spoke to David Van Amberg, who is the managing director of the American Customer Satisfaction Index, to ask him a few questions. And the first question to him was, why? Why is the customer satisfaction going up?
Well, it's really two different kinds of things working together, Herb. One being the food itself. So many choices, so many options out there. Restaurants are doing a great job of essentially catering to all possible tastes. That doesn't mean every restaurant is, you know, serving a menu that's running the gamut of every kind of food you could imagine, but that there are so many different kinds of options out there, and restaurants that are doing those food options with high quality, that customers are very satisfied with the food. The second piece that's coming into play is a lot of technology being brought into the restaurant industry that's making it faster, more efficient than ever before, whether it's using mobile apps to order, kiosks, this concept of fast pass lanes and drive-throughs. All of those things together are combining to make a faster, more efficient, better service experience for customers as well.
Yeah,
so, Nick, clearly, while millennials are the group that's demanding more technology, the National Restaurant Association told me that it's basically all consumers are looking for more technology to try to speed up the process. McDonald's announced that it is going to be upgrading 1,000 stores with kiosks and mobile order technology every quarter for the next 8 to 9 quarters. There's rumor going around or reports going around that Applebee's is going to come up with an app, that they're working on an app whereby you would be able to make a reservation and order your food, show up no matter how busy the restaurant was, sit at your table, and when you're done, pay via the app to speed up the whole process. Panera has invested very, very heavily in this. They actually consider themselves, as I wrote in my story, a digital restaurant,
yeah.
And they were just named Influencer of the Year by the Interactive Consumer Experience Association. So they sell stuff by mobile and web and kiosk transaction going gangbusters. And then the Capital Grille restaurant, they have now taken their printed wine list, over 350 bottles of wine, and they have now digitized this. So when you want to order a wine, they bring an iPad to your table and show you the wine list, and you can get a picture of the wine, the label. You can find out the tasting notes about the wine. You can arrange them if you want to by varietal or by region or by type of wine or by price or by points. So you can group them that, or price. You can group them that way if you want. And you can even, when you're booking your restaurant using their concierge app, you can reserve a specific bottle of wine when you're making your reservation. And I asked them what customers thought about this, because I've seen these wine lists before digital, and they're really nice because you see the bottle and everything. And they said, we've had fabulous reaction because we don't have to disappoint someone. You don't bring the wine list to the table, and then they say, I'd like this bottle of wine, and they come back 2 minutes later and say, you know, we just sold the last one from the wine cellar a minute ago. Mm-hmm. It's instantaneously updated via Wi-Fi, so they'll never offer you a bottle of wine that isn't available in the wine cellar.
Wow. But, you know, technology affects everything now whenever you go out to eat. Like, for instance, my folks and I just went to Red Robin a few weeks ago just to have a couple of burgers, and every table has the automated, you know, where you can actually swipe your credit card and pay that way. And I see that now in a lot of these casual dining places.
Yes, and actually Red Robin had their score go up 8% this year, the biggest jump of any chain in the nation that they surveyed, because of better food, better menu items, and because of this tabletop technology, which is really funny because Red Robin started here in Seattle, and we've gone to a restaurant where for 3 times in a row the kiosk wouldn't work, and the tabletop thing, which is frustrating as hell.
Yeah.
And just like, I'm not coming back or this is making me crazy. And so technology, the point is technology's got to work right, or it can really annoy people, and the technology has got to be something that if people can't use it, you got to be able to get their order some other way. So you can't exclude the 20% of the people surveys show that don't want to use technology and don't think it enhances the experience. You can't lose them. You've got to have it available for the people who want to use it, and then have it a way to handle the people who don't want to use it. I want to give you, because I have some more interviews,
yeah,
here with David.
Absolutely, please.
So I think the big thing is everybody wants to know the fast food restaurants, because we spend a lot of money there. And it was interesting. Third year in a row, Chick-fil-A took top honors, 87 out of 100 points. That's unbelievable. Panera Bread scored an 81. And then come the two pizza giants, Papa John's and Pizza Hut, at 80. And I asked David Amberg, what's going on with the pizza wars?
With pizza, you have Papa John's and Pizza Hut tied. Domino's only a point behind, so 3 of the 4 chains are very close together, suggesting that a lot of competition for pizza delivery is really driving satisfaction with that particular category of fast food, although Little Caesars actually lags quite a bit behind the other three, so that could be worrisome for them going forward.
For Mexican, Chipotle scored a 79, so it's holding its own. It didn't change at all. People are coming back to the restaurant, but the satisfaction hasn't increased since the health scare that concerned so many people.
Yeah.
And then we have the burger chains, which never do all that well, and Wendy's beat Burger King this year. And I asked David, what's going on with the burger chains?
The interesting thing about the burger chains is that they're all clustered at the bottom. Burger King, Wendy's, McDonald's, Jack in the Box, which is a smaller chain but still a burger chain, are really mired, you know, below average for the fast food industry at the bottom of the industry. These are brands that have been around for half a century or more in many cases, and I think consumers are increasingly finding those burger chains to be a little tired, not as flashy, not as up and coming as some of the other brands that we're measuring, like a Chick-fil-A, a Panera, a Chipotle, and the pizza chains. Just a little, they've been around for a very long time, so what's really that exciting about them anymore? They've got definitely more work to do to stay relevant compared to some of these other chains.
Mm.
And finally, I'm always interested in coffee, since I do live in the land of Starbucks.
Yeah.
And Dunkin' Donuts and Starbucks tied. They both tied at 78 degrees. And I asked David if he thought that was unusual that Starbucks, you know, which is so into gourmet and the experience, tied Dunkin' Donuts. And here's what he had to say about that.
The tie really is largely the result of how consumers perceive the value proposition of Starbucks versus Dunkin' Donuts. The reality is this. Customers may not feel that the quality of the coffee at Dunkin' is quite up to par compared to Starbucks, but it's considerably cheaper. So to put another way, Starbucks prices tend to drag down satisfaction or the overall experience a little bit with Starbucks. And at the end of the day, consumers are essentially rating both of those brands equally when it comes to satisfaction.
Mm. And for just good old coffee, Dunkin' Donuts rates really well, as does McDonald's, by the way, from most surveys.
Yeah.
Everything is in here, all the results on consumerman.com, but people always want to know about the full chain restaurants. Texas Roadhouse was number one. That was followed by Longhorn Steakhouse, which had a big jump in customer satisfaction. And then, of course, Nick, your favorite, the Olive Garden, took third place.
There you go. Well, you know, it's really interesting. I will say this. I used to be a coffee drinker. I gave up caffeine, I guess it was 14, 15 years. No, even longer than that. Something like that. And I don't do caffeine. But my favorite coffee when I was a coffee drinker was Dunkin' Donuts, without question.
Yeah. And here in Seattle, we actually get an IV drip going in the morning.
It's funny here, you know, whenever I'm here during the day, it's not very often, but when I'm here in the morning and you know, during the crossover, when we're leaving and, you know, the actual people, you know, actual humans who work here during normal hours start coming in, I like to look at what coffee cups they have. You know, like where they went before they came here. And it really does, you know, when we were at the Trib building, there were two Starbucks, like right one across the street and one down the block. So Starbucks won most of the time because you just go right across the street. But I see a lot of Dunkin' Donuts cups and a lot of places, but it's usually between Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah. See, I just want a good old plain cup of coffee, and I don't want to spend a lot of money and all the frou-frou, and that's why, you know, despite the fact I live here, it just doesn't do a whole lot for me.
I'm with you, too. When I was a coffee drinker, when all the fancy stuff started to show up, I was like, look, just give me some coffee.
And it's the price and the calories.
Yeah, I know. You get one of them Frappuccino, Whippuccino things, and that's five meals in one cup.
Exactly.
It's interesting. Another thing that you pointed out here, and we talked briefly about it, is that McDonald's came in last.
Yes, it's at the bottom for the third year in a row. Even though they're the world's largest restaurant chain, you know, people sort of know what they get from McDonald's, but the company is working to improve its menu. I think we're all aware that they realize that there needs to be some changes made. People did give them some points for improving the menu. It just wasn't enough to push them up in the overall customer satisfaction, but it's going to be interesting to see if all these changes that McDonald's is making will play out in better numbers when we get the report next year.
Yeah, and but they seem to be right on the cusp of all this technology, you know, with the kiosks and the other automated app stuff that's happening right now. McDonald's seems to be at the forefront of that, despite the fact that they scored last.
Yeah, they got 14,000 restaurants in this country, and they expect to have them all with kiosks probably in a year or something like that. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see if the added tech and the better menu choices and them trying to up the quality of the food is going to play out in better ratings next year.
Okay. Well, listen, we got this whole article.
I'm hungry.
See, now I don't drink coffee, but now I'm craving a cup of coffee.
Right.
So. But anyway, this article is fantastic, and all the details and the numbers are there. And on the full interview that we heard a little bit of is on here as well. And you can go to consumerman.com to read this article about customer satisfaction with restaurants. All right, great stuff, Herb. Hang on, okay?
You got it, Nick.
All right, Herb Weissbaum is with us. He is our consumer man, and you can call us if you have a concern or a question. Or text us, 312-981-7200. I got a couple of more news stories to talk about, consumer-related. But if you want to jump in with a concern or question, we'd love to hear you and help you out. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break here on 720 WGN. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here at 303 Wacker. Beautiful downtown Chicago on a Thursday morning. Triple Play Thursday in effect coming up in a little bit. Get your requests in. That's one artist, three songs. Get them in now. 312-981-7200. Right now, Herb Weissbaum is with us. He is an Emmy Award-winning reporter. He covers the consumer beat for NBCNews.com. You can check out consumerman.com for more info. If you have questions or concerns, consumer-related issues, 312-981-7200. Let's welcome Herb back. Welcome back, Herb.
Thank you, Nick.
Hey, tell everybody how they can get your newsletter.
Just go to the website you mentioned, consumerman.com, and the form will pop up, and you give me your name and your email address, and every week you will get a short email from me listing the stories I've done for NBC News and a few other consumer items, and you may even get a podcast or two, such as this show will be on there for next week's Consumer Man newsletter.
So get it. It's free, and you don't share anybody's information and all that kind of stuff.
Don't share it, sell it, rent it, show it to my dog. It's between you and me.
Consumerman.com. Get that free newsletter and subscribe right now. Hey, by the way, what's really interesting, Herb, in our studio here, we have monitors pretty much all over the place. And up on a big shelf above where I can see Dan, there are three monitors. One has our security cameras that are aimed at me, the newsroom and sports and all that stuff.
Right.
And then the other two are on, different TV channels. Right now, there is, and then I just find this really amusing, there is a half an hour infomercial, Is Your Credit in Crisis, with Larry King. And Larry King.
Oh, Larry.
Yeah, Larry King has got a guest on who's plugging a book called Credit Secrets. I'm looking at it right now. How to Manage Your Student Debt and its Effect on Your Credit, and they're covering all these kind of things. And it looks as though, the graphics, by the way, look as though it's like the Larry King show. So it looks like it's a big news, breaking news story, but I just thought it was amusing that that's on right now.
And the funny thing is, there are no credit secrets. Everybody knows how credit works. It's very spelled out. It's regulated. It's like there's things to do if you have credit problems. There's things to do if you get your credit score up, things that drop your credit score. There's no secrets involved in this. It's all out there.
Yeah.
Everybody knows it, and you don't have to pay anybody for their book or their secrets or anything like that.
Yeah, he's interviewing the author right now, and it looks very important. But I just thought it was amusing that this infomercial happens to be on while I'm talking to you.
Right.
So we have a question that just came in, Herb, and it's a text. You ready?
Sure.
This is from Nick. Hey, good name, buddy. I have a kid going to college, and I would like to protect his identity, but he will probably need a credit card. Shall I install the freeze or wait? Should I set up a monitoring service or both?
Okay, well, first of all, a lot of people, parents think that the best way to do it is to give their kids or make sure their kids get a debit card because they think they'll be more responsible. You can certainly get them a debit card to go with their checking account, but I'm a big believer in trying to teach them responsibility with a credit card. Also remember that a debit card does not start a credit file, and a credit card does. So all those years they're in college, if they're just doing a debit card, they're building up no credit history, and one of the things that goes to boost your credit scores, how long you've managed credit responsibly. So figure out a way to get them a card. You can either add them to your account so that you have control of them and know what's going on. You certainly don't want to be a co-signer on their card. That is something you do not want to do. You want to either add them as a person who can use your card or help them, if they somehow have a job, they could get a card on their own, maybe with a very low credit limit, and then they can start using that. But this is the time to start teaching them responsibility. Once they have a credit file, then they can go in and they can freeze that file or secure that file so no one does any damage to it. So that's basically the way to go.
Okay. All right. Hope that helps you out. All right. One more story.
And by the way, we're going to talk about this, I think, but the great thing here is that credit freezes are going to be free.
That's exactly what we were going to go to. So it's a nice segue.
Yeah, and that's great. Now, in your state, I just checked, in Illinois, and it's different in every state, but in Illinois, senior citizens 65 or older can get a credit freeze for free right now. You can also get a credit freeze for free if you're a victim of identity theft, which means you filed a police report that indicates you're the victim of identity theft. But starting in September, Congress actually did something good for consumers. They passed a law that says that the credit bureaus will have to offer this service to you for free. That means you can lock your credit file at Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion, the big three credit bureaus, and then you can unlock it anytime you need to apply for credit for free. You can lock it and you can unlock it. The value of this, there's only one type of crime that you can stop proactively when it comes to identity theft, and that is financial crime. Somebody takes your social and your date of birth and your information and tries to get a new credit card or take over your credit card account or open a new bank account or try to take over your bank account or get a car loan or something like that in your name. By locking up your credit file, if they were to go to Macy's and Macy's says, hey, if you open a credit card right now and we'll give you 20% off and they're not you but they have your personal information, they will not be able to open that charge card because your account is frozen. They won't be able to go to Verizon and open up a cell phone account. They won't be able to go to Comcast and open up a account for cable because a credit check will be done and it'll bounce back, say the account is sealed, it is frozen. They can't do that. So that can prevent this type of crime from happening. And it's a great thing to do, and it's going to be free by September, to the end of September. And then again, if you wanted to do something, like you wanted to be spontaneous and get credit, or you wanted to apply for a car loan or do something, you could unfreeze it, and then the company could check your credit, and then you could freeze it again. It would all be free. Right now, you're going to pay $10 a pop in, for instance, Illinois, every single time you froze it or unfroze it, which is what's discouraged people from doing this very, very important thing. So I'm really, really thrilled about that. We're not sure how they're going to implement it, because right now TransUnion and Equifax have a thing called a credit lock. It's not quite as good as a credit freeze, because a credit freeze is required by law. But what this does is it gives you app control, Nick. So, for instance, my wife, when I was writing a story about this, we wanted to see how it works. So we put a credit lock on her TransUnion and her Equifax report, yeah. And it's basically an app on the phone or your desktop. You go, it's like Tinder for credit. Boop, I want to lock my credit file. Boop, right. I want to open my credit file. It's instantaneous. So, again, if you were at Macy's and wanted to get that credit offer, boop, you slide it. They can check your credit. Boop, you can lock it back again. We're not sure if they're going to do that same kind of thing for the freeze, because obviously they want to encourage you to get the lock, because then they can market you stuff, which they can't do if you have a freeze. Mm. People always ask, does a freeze affect my relationship with my current creditors? It does not. And the other question they always ask, will this affect my credit score? It will not. All a credit freeze does is new credit accounts being opened in your name because they can't get into your file. And your caller, your texter asked about monitoring. Credit monitoring, if you want to do it, is fine and want to pay the whatever $19 to $30 a month. Credit monitoring cannot prevent identity theft. It can only help alert you to a problem if there is a problem. If you have the money and it makes you feel better, you know, be my guest. But there are plenty of things you can do on your own that don't require this, and this $1 million guarantee and all the other hoo-ha they say, it's not a monetary situation for most people. It's a time situation. You got to cancel credit cards and cancel bank accounts and call creditors and do, I don't know if they've ever paid $1 million to anybody. If they have it, I'm sure it isn't a lot of people. And there's a lot of fine print involved with these policies. So if you feel like it and you have the money, you want to do it, that's fine. But credit monitoring cannot stop identity theft. A credit freeze or a credit lock can, and I have an article on consumerman.com that explains the difference between the two and even shows the pictures of those apps and how it works if you want to do that kind of thing.
Okay, great. And that's all at consumerman.com. All right. Yep. Herb, always a pleasure. I just wanted to let you know that the Credit Secrets package was $139.80, but it's now you can get it for $39.95.
We got some steak knives to go with that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I just wanted to let you know that that's what they're asking for. All right. Herb, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you next month, okay?
Thanks a lot, Nick.
Take care. There you go. Herb Weissbaum, always a pleasure, informative, good guy. Check out consumerman.com and get his newsletter. All right, we're going to take a break. The news is coming up right after this.